Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues is the name of this show. Thank you for listening to AFR. In studio with me today is Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Fred Jackson.
Yes, sir. We are here, ready to go.
And we're in our studios here in Tupelo, Mississippi.
I'd like to know from Brent how many shopping days I have left.
Brent Creeley?
Yeah, Brent Creeley. How many shopping days I have left until Christmas?
Guys, I normally have that pulled up ready to go for you, but you've caught me at a moment where I didn't have it pulled up, so bear with me.
Well, you've been explaining yourself for the last 10 seconds.
We can probably count those ourselves.
Dr. Ray Pritchard's in Kansas City, Kansas. How you doing, Ray?
Hey, I'm doing good, and here in Kansas City, I think there's, 12 more shopping days, something like that.
You think it's different than from where we're at?
Yeah, it could be, you know.
You never
it's
know.
It's possible.
So, shopping days to Christmas. Go ahead, Brent. Do you know the answer yet?
Actually, it's 12 days till Christmas. So, shopping days, yeah. You've got 11.
We're just about done. We got one thing for our grandson that we got to. My wife's got to pick up today, and then I think we're done.
Did you?
Yeah, we.
That's right. Loose use of the word we.
Yes.
Now, I think Ed is probably the type of person that also counts the day after Christmas as Christmas shopping, because then he buys for next year.
That's
on
correct.
The sales, right?
No, I don't do any of that.
It goes all the way to New Year's Eve, I think.
The only person I have to worry about, is my wife, Allison.
Yeah.
That's the only person I'm responsible for. She does everything else.
That's a lot of pressure because
you
get that wrong.
Have you taken care of it yet, Tim? Are you finished with
that yet? No, I haven't. And there have been times when I'm getting too personal here. I guess. I don't know. There have been times
when we're
out of money and we look at each other and go, "You don't have to get me nothing." And she goes, "You don't have to get me."
I'll just tell you that's what we do every year.
Yeah, we'll just go out and eat dinner or something.
The only thing I really am interested in is books or maybe Boston, some old. Or Boston Bruins sweatshirt or something.
Right.
And usually during the year, if we can swing it, I just get it. I'll get a book or a movie, yeah. and so it all goes to the grandkids.
I can hit a home run every time with a massage.
You really are getting too personal.
Yeah, I know. No.
No, that's money well spent.
Wife.
I've done that too.
As a gift.
All right. Thank
well, that
you.
Did
Thank
sound
you.
Bad.
Thank you
it
for
is.
That clarification.
Yeah, I'm going to stop right there. A little too much information there.
That's right, folks.
What I meant to say, that did sound bad.
It's too late.
What I meant to say, and I think most people whose mind were in the right place understood that I was saying if I buy my wife a massage for Christmas at the local salon.
Legitimate salon.
Yes. This has not been raided by the police or anything
That's
like
right.
that. That she loves that.
Yeah.
And,
well, thank you for that clarification.
I can't go wrong. And back to the news.
Yeah, get us out of that, Fred.
Good night. I don't know why I started down that road. That was a road I...
Nothing good's going to come of
a road to nowhere.
Well, there was no stop sign.
Oh, dear.
All right, Fred, what's happening in our nation's capital?
Well,
it's not sordid or tawdry.
Oh, no.
Right.
Yes.
Nothing to
Where
see
you got?
Here, folks.
Well, we're just hours away from the House Judiciary Committee making a final vote on articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump. So there's another fiery session going on right now, back and forth between Republicans and Democrats as we sit here. But can I start off today's program?
The Democrats are not fiery.
They're not fiery?
No, they're somber.
Oh,
it's
yes, that's right.
How about that?
Yeah. They're in a solemn mode.
Yes,
Fred.
They are.
They're saddened.
Sad.
Go ahead.
Hey, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Democrat Gerald Nadler, I wanted to start off by playing a clip that we played a couple of times now Nadler, this is Congressman Nadler back in 1998 giving his opinion of what constitutes a proper impeachment of a president. Remember, this is the Clinton years.
Right.
So I want you to listen what he said once again was the proper way that an impeachment should be handled. Cut number 11.
Because he knew quite properly that an impeachment of a president is an undoing of a national election. And one of the reasons we all feel so angry about what they are doing is that they are ripping from us, they are ripping asunder our votes. They are telling us that our votes don't count and that the election must be set aside.
That was Gerald Nadler in 1998. That they're undoing an election, and this is improper.
He's talking about what the Republicans are doing.
Didn't he also say, are you going to play anything else from him? Okay.
It had to be bipartisan.
Yes, right.
That there had to be both members mm-hmm. from both parties that right. agreed to this.
Yes.
That's what he was saying in 1998.
Yeah.
None of this is happening. In fact, this morning, the ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee, Congressman Doug Collins of Georgia, reminded Nadler once again that part of the procedure is supposed to be that the minority party in all of this has a hearing where they get to call witnesses. Nadler replies, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to abide by that. We're not going to give you a chance to call witnesses to refute of all the witnesses that we have done.
Right.
In fact, Congressman Collins was helped out by Congresswoman Debbie Lasko, who's a Republican from Arizona. She expressed outrage that Nadler is refusing to schedule this minority hearing. Cut number one.
Under the House rules, it says you're required to set a minority hearing so that we can at least call witnesses, so we can get some truth out to the American public instead of this one-sided sham. But no, here again, I think you said right here, no, we're not going to do that. Well, I'll consider a date in the future that you can have a minority hearing. For goodness sakes, we're voting on this today. It's no good to have a date in the future. Then it's done. You've already put through this. I mean, it just continues to amaze me how corrupt, how unfair this process has been from the start.
She's exactly right. That is Congresswoman Debbie Lasko from Arizona.
Ray, what do you think about this?
Wow. The sheer emotion in her voice. She's got the Democrats dead to rights right there. Isn't it clear, guys? This is not even the sham appearance of a bipartisan hearing. Right. They don't want to hear from the Republicans, and they don't care what the rules say.
Yeah. I tell you what, on the Senate side yesterday, I was able to listen to a good bit of what Lindsey Graham said. I think he had 45 minutes or something mm-hmm. like that in his opening remarks. He's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate. Of course, yes. Lindsey Graham from South Carolina. And I'll just be honest with you, and oftentimes I'm not, and that is that I was no fan of Lindsey Graham prior to the Kavanaugh hearings, because he's best friends with John McCain, and I just saw them as compromisers of the conservative cause in many ways on several issues. Now, I'm sure Lindsey Graham, who I met one time at the Values Voters Summit, he would say, no, I'm not. But nonetheless, when he stood up for Kavanaugh in that hearing against the left, and framed it so perfectly, you know, what we were facing. And he acted a little bit stunned in the Kavanaugh hearings that the Democrats were acting like we're going to such lengths as to smear and to lie about Kavanaugh's past of some something happened in high school.
Right.
And they were going to keep him off the Supreme Court for that reason.
He was angry. He was visibly angry when he... You're talking about...
I'm talking about Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey Graham.
And then yesterday, you know, he's a rock star with the way he handled that yesterday. Mm-hmm.
And you described it as an epiphany for him. It seems like that mm-hmm. Kavanaugh hearing made him, for maybe for the first time, see through the, you know, the Senate is collegial and we may disagree, but we're right. all on the same team. It seemed like for the first time he saw through that and saw what the Democrat, the lengths the Democrats were willing to go to poison the political process. Mm-hmm. It was extraordinary. And like you said, he's been that way since.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Senator Graham, because we're going to hear from him in just a second. What happens today is it'll be a party line vote in this House Judiciary Committee. The Democrats will vote to impeach. The Republicans will all oppose.
And it's not the final word. It's, no. It then has to go to the House.
It goes to the House next week.
Full House.
Lots of questions as to how many Democrats, if any, will go over and join the Republicans against impeachment. But if it passes the House, it then goes to Senator Lindsey Graham, the Senate Judiciary Committee. In the midst of all the debate going on this morning, Fox News just did an interview with Senator Graham, and they asked him a very simple question. Should it pass through the House, these articles of impeachment, it comes to you, Senator Graham, what are you going to do with this? Cut number 10.
I don't want to give it any legitimacy because it's a crock. You know, I trusted Mueller, who is an outside entity, to look at all things Trump and Russia. He did for 2 years and took no action. Every impeachment except this one has been conducted by outside counsel. Ken Starr and Clinton, the Watergate prosecutors, found misconduct by President Nixon. This is being driven by Democratic partisans. It's being rushed. There's no due process. Abuse of power, if you're looking for it, my Democratic House colleagues, look in the mirror. So here's what's going to happen. I hope we'll look at the record they used to impeach the president. If they get 218 votes, that will be the trial record. Let the House managers present their case. Let the president's lawyers comment on the House case, then vote. I don't have any desire to call the vice president. I don't have any desire to call Pompeo, Hunter Biden, or Joe Biden. We can look at the Biden affair outside of impeachment. My goal is to end this as soon as possible for the good of the country, because I think it's a danger to the presidency to legitimize this.
So there you have it. Senator Graham, that's how he plans to handle this if it passes through the House.
Well, good for him. Let me relate it to the topic we're talking about. Guys, what the country has learned, if you're going to be objective about this, even if you don't like the president or didn't vote for him, and even the liberal media are seeing this and commenting on this last night, and that is that there were people at the FBI, several people at the FBI in senior management who were out to get President Trump. That's just,
right.
Right. They saw themselves as trying to save the country from him. That was their duty and obligation. And their names are very familiar now if you've been paying attention to this whole thing. And it's all started with them protecting Hillary Clinton, James Comey protecting Hillary Clinton from prosecution on what happened with the when she was using the server in her bathroom for United States government Secretary of State official business.
Right.
We all know that what happened there. But so the Horowitz hearing, which is what the basis of a lot of what we're talking about, came from yesterday. Is it yesterday or did it start the day before? Anyway,
it's yesterday.
He said initially, reports were he said that these actions taken against President Trump were not motivated by politics. But that was the headline when the report was released, and I fell for it at first. I was going, oh well, I guess this is a nothing burger. But no, it had a lot of beef to it when you were able to. That one line was pulled out for the media to use. But now last night, Andrea Mitchell on NBC, Chuck Todd. These are people who are very liberal in their politics, and they don't like the president, you know. And they were saying, Ray, that that there's some what I forgot the words.
Do we have that? Do we have that sound from
Andrew Mitchell? No,
we do. We don't. We do or don't.
We do not.
Okay. Well, did you see this? Do you know what I'm talking about, Ray?
I heard about it. I mean, now you've got testimony from the left-leaning mainstream media basically saying, they're not exactly saying there's nothing there, but they're saying that the Democrats' case is seriously deficient.
Yeah, and of course related to this, the politics of it all, the polling out there across the country, this is not helping, in fact hurting the Democrats with independent voters. They don't think that Donald Trump should be handcuffed and removed from the Oval Office over what the allegations are by the Democrats. Did you have a clip we wanted to play, Fred?
I think we can find that Andrea Mitchell clip
from last week. Have it coming from Chuck Todd and Andrea Mitchell, we do have the Andrea Mitchell?
Yes.
Okay, that's what we're about to hear. Of course, she's the senior. She's been around for a long time as a political reporter for NBC. I think she was on Meet the Press. I mean, she's had a very distinguished career. Here's what she had to say.
But there were very clear mistakes made by the FBI in the first approval and subsequent reapprovals, submissions for authorization by the FISA court, that special security judge who approves surveillance. And a particular point is something that is pretty egregious, which is the altering of a document to not inform the court and to not inform others that Carter Page, who was a former campaign associate of the president's, was actually also at times a confidential source of the CIA. And to not share that information is pretty, which would have been very, you know, obviously exculpatory, which might have led the judge to not approve the
Well, I'll go further, what we all know here. Whoever did this, do they know who did this? They know the lawyer's name.
It's Klingsmith. Klingsmith.
Okay.
I didn't know.
Kevin Klingsmith. We talked about him
yesterday. Is the one who altered the email?
He is the lawyer for the FBI who kind of screens the memos, the documents that are going to go to the FISA court. He is the one who found out the CIA wrote him and said, by the way, Carter Page is actually working for the CIA. So he's not in collusion with the Russians. He's working for us to talk to the Russians.
That's right.
And this lawyer, what's his name?
Klingsmith.
He knew this. He knew this information prior to going to the FISA court for a search warrant of Carter Page.
And he actually changed the document from the CIA. He changed the document.
Yeah, because here's the thing. If the FISA judge knew that Carter Page was working for the CIA to keep an eye on the Russians, the FISA judge would not have approved the surveillance of Carter Page as if he was an asset of the Russians.
That's what Andrea Mitchell is calling egregious.
I would
go further. It is egregious.
Oh, he's going to be charged.
But if I were him, he's a lawyer, but he better lawyer up because this Dunham?
Durham.
John Durham.
And this is what William Barr. This is why William Barr is speaking out. The AG. This is why special counsel Durham is speaking out, about what Horowitz had to say. They're saying, hold on, wait a minute. There's a lot more to this criminally than what Horowitz is. Horowitz said, I can't read their minds. Well, as you said, Fred, I heard Abe talking about this year. This yesterday, when 17 errors are made, and they're all to the disadvantage of President Trump, candidate Trump / President Trump, 17 that are cited by the Horowitz, and they're all one way, and you can sit here and say with a straight face that's coincidental, or that's you know, it isn't like they had a report and they failed to dot the I.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's a mistake, Ray. This was a coup attempt.
It was deliberate. And they knew what they were doing. We've known. We've said over and over again. They hated Mr. Trump and the Trump administration, and doing everything they can to bring him down.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
I mean, this I didn't know this before yesterday or maybe the day before.
I didn't know that the document had been changed.
Yes,
I don't know why
the whole point of – I'm using the colloquial way that we would normally use it. The whole point of the FBI saying we want to spy on Carter Page, the whole point they made was they go to the judge and they said, hey, this guy's talking to Russians. He's a part of the Trump campaign.
Right.
So we want to spy on the Trump campaign and Carter Page. And this information was not passed along to the FISA court judge that the reason Carter Page is talking to the Russians is he's keeping an eye on the Russians for the CIA. This is
and if the guy, I'm quite frankly, I'm flabbergasted that an attorney that has risen to the level, has he denied this? Do you know if he's talking at all?
I'm sure he's a lawyer. He's said nothing.
Okay. Yeah. I'm still a Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, whatever, a lawyer. I'm shocked that he would be so dumb as to try to intentionally mislead a FISA court judge to try to get a search warrant unless he thought it would never.
You just bingoed. He was confident that he would never be found out.
Because Hillary Clinton would win.
That's right.
But
here's the other thing. Senator Josh Hawley, Republican from Missouri, was on Fox and Friends this morning. He introduced another element to this. Why was there all this confidence amongst James Comey, this lawyer, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, why were they so confident their scheme would work? Did they have the approval of people above them?
Namely, the Attorney General.
Or
the President of the United States.
This is cut number two. Senator Hawley from Missouri asked that question. Cut number two.
You cannot tell me that case agents, mid-level, low-level case agents, opened up this surveillance program without the supervision of, say, the Attorney General or the President of the United States. I think we need to find this out. Mm-hmm. What did the Attorney General know, Loretta Lynch? What did the President, Barack Obama, what did he know? Are we really to believe that the FBI is conducting a surveillance campaign during an election of a political opponent and the White House doesn't know anything about it? I think we got to find that out.
Has President Obama or Attorney General Lynch commented on this?
Not a word.
No.
Well, they probably need to be put under oath by the Justice Department because this is extremely serious. And if Barack Obama, the then president, signed off on this?
Well,
I doubt he did, but I'm just saying.
This is where President Barack Obama and former Attorney General Loretta Lynch would say, we didn't know this was going on, and then you have to prove it.
Okay.
And so then you have to, this is what Mueller tried to do on the Russia investigation, you have to try to flip lower-level people and say, if you were told to do it, you better be able to produce proof. I want to see an email from Loretta Lynch telling you to go forward with this. That's the only way you'll get those higher-ups.
I don't know. I hastily said put them under oath, but I mean, really, this is so serious, Ray.
There was no need. It would have to go to the president or the AG. Stuff like this happens by lower level, all the time.
No, I agree, and of course, I don't think President Obama would. I don't think they would tell him something like this because they wouldn't want him to know.
Right.
Do it.
Yeah, just do it. And now the Attorney General.
The one who met with Clinton on the tarmac?
Well,
about the grandkids.
Who told Comey to change it to a matter, not an investigation?
Yeah.
She was a rank political hack, right? For the Democrats. And we shall return momentarily with more of today's issues on American Family Radio. Jan Markell will join us. The President of the United States issued a pretty strong statement condemning anti-Semitism yesterday in an executive order. We'll talk about that. And Dr. Robert Jeffress, who was at the White House, will join us in 15 minutes. Stay with us.
You can use this information right here.
Tim Wildman discusses life's most important issues.
So you could have a sea turtle alive out there right now that was here during the Civil War.
It's like getting a university degree.
Kind of.
Tell the world.
Here's What's the question, Ed? How wide is the wingspan of the world's largest roach species?
Listen to the Trivia Friday edition of Today's Issues, Friday mornings at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Trivia Friday. Woo. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. I am currently reading a book titled 1776 by David McCullough. I would highly recommend this book about our country's founding. It's been on my to-do list for 10 years, and I finally got around to it. But an excellent book it is, and a lot of it's about the life of George Washington. What an amazing story. Without George Washington, I doubt I would be talking to you today. That's how instrumental and important he was to our country's founding. He was a man used by God. We're going to be going to Mount Vernon, his home, on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June and September. Our tours in June and September, Spiritual Heritage Tours to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. And then we're going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour. For all the information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, that's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I wrote in my new book, Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation, that the ultimate goal of the sex and gender revolutionaries was to completely destroy gender. In their world, there would be no more men or women. We would all be a bunch of genderless droids. A lot of leftists blasted my assertion, but the truth is that's exactly what's happening. Merriam-Webster just revised its dictionary to include the word they as a singular pronoun used to describe non-binary people. And a number of universities across the nation have adapted genderless language. The College Fix reports the University of Michigan and Maryland have started referring to alumni as alumnex. It does not seem to matter. The word alumni is derived from a Latin word that is, in fact, genderless. So what's the Latin word for moronic? Be sure to get a signed copy of Culture Jihad on my website, toddstarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Merry Christmas from Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Dr. Robert Jeffress will be with us in about 12 to 15 minutes. He was at the White House yesterday at the ceremony. Where President Trump issued an executive order regarding anti-Semitism, condemning anti-Semitism and talking about the problem there. So we'll be discussing that with him. I wanted to say one other thing. I don't know how much more time we'll have for this topic, but it's the news of the week, and what's happening in Washington, D.C. has been happening in Washington, D.C. And what we've learned now, categorically or without question. By the way, Ray's with us from Kansas City. Ed and Fred are in studio with me here on Today's Issues. And that is, there were several folks in high-ranking positions at the Federal Bureau of Investigation that were out to get Donald Trump. I don't know how she phrased it. I hate to say that. But that's just what has become clear. Now, they may say they had their reasons. I don't buy it. I don't think anybody who's listening to this buys it. But let me just say this, too. Lindsey Graham made a great point, and maybe we can find it in his opening remarks. I think it was in his opening remarks. He said that, listen, when Dianne Feinstein, I think she's the ranking
Minority senator. Senate Judiciary Committee.
On the Judiciary Committee. So she is, she sits to the right of Lindsey Graham. He said she was afforded the opportunity to be told by the FBI that she had a person working in her office who was also working for the Chinese government. You remember that?
Yes.
And he said so that she could do something about it. That's, I think that's professional. Either that's professional courtesy or that's protocol, or maybe the law. But what Lindsey Graham was saying, nobody ever told Donald Trump anything. The FBI didn't bother to tell him anything about who they were investigating, or so they. That was another reason they were trying to hide everything from President Trump and I guess his top advisors, so that they didn't know. And of course, the way they trapped General Flynn was, that's what I would call it. The way they tricked him, maybe tricked him.
No, you don't need a lawyer. We're just gonna catch up. You know,
right? Well, the whole thing is just. And I don't know how James Comey acts like a saint. He does. This was completely, totally legit. Whole thing was. Despite all these facts that have come out.
Right. Even saints wind up getting burned at the stake. I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
Comey's not out of the woods.
When James Comey took his personal notes over to his neighbor and said, please get this to the newspaper.
Right.
Please get this to the New York Times. It's my notes from my meeting with Trump or whatever it was. Can you help me get it and make it public?
This will trigger
a special
prosecutor.
Who does that?
Who? Not a saint.
I don't know. I've never. Right. Who walks over to your neighbor's house? You know, what do you carry cookies over and say, hey, by the way.
Yeah. Got some notes here. Yeah,
right. Huh? Let me get that. Can you help me get these to the...
Are you going downtown anytime this week?
Yeah.
I think you could stop by the New York Times office.
Yeah, just drop by.
Just tell them it's from me.
Oh, me.
They know me down there.
Oh, my goodness gracious. All right. Jan Markell joins us, as she does most Thursdays, from Minneapolis, Twin Cities area. Jan is president and founder of Olive Tree Ministries and host of Understanding the Times, which is a radio program featured here on AFR on Saturdays and Sundays. Jan, good morning to you.
Well, thank you for having me.
You been paying attention to any of this stuff going on in D.C.?
Well, trying to, but you know, the drama keeps changing. It honestly keeps getting worse and worse.
I know.
It's just unbelievable that our country has slid into this kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, but we'll see. By the way, in Minnesota, I'm curious, your home state there. Hillary Clinton won Minnesota, right? Narrowly.
Yes, she did, but barely.
Barely.
I mean, barely, okay. is the emphasis.
But I'm hearing that President Trump is a 50-50 chance there this time, at least if the election
was here in October, and I wasn't there, but I had staff people there, and it was an incredible evening sometime in October, and sadly, on the outside, I'm sure you're well aware that it was a riot going, a terrible, terrible ordeal. Some folks could hardly get into the Target Center without literally being harmed by the rabble-rousers, who were coming against the attendees, the police, even the police horses were under attack. And it was a little microcosm, I think, of some of the turmoil we're seeing around the world. I mean, we're seeing riots. In some cases, they're freedom fighters. I mean, in Hong Kong and in Iran, they're trying to break away from the corrupt leadership. But then you've got the more kind of the vicious kind of anarchy, and that's what came to the heartland in October, and we saw it up close and personal, this hatred for our president, who, you know, he's a terribly flawed man, but his heart is truly to help the country, to turn it around as he has, and I'm sure Dr. Jeffress, a good friend of mine, is going to have a wonderful report there for you. So none of this makes a lot of sense other than the darkness is pushing back against the light.
Yeah, great point.
Yes.
Fred, you wanted to ask Jan about a particular...
Yeah, Jan is well aware, I know, of anti-Semitism that's growing around the world and sadly even in this country. And another demonstration of that we've seen in the last couple of weeks, Pensacola, Florida, Saudi Arabian student lets it be known that he's going to attack others because he hates Israel and he hates America supporting Israel. And we have three cadets that died down there at the hands of that Saudi Arabian student. But then on Tuesday this week, Jan, we had this terrorism attacks, what it was,
yeah,
in Jersey City, New Jersey, just across the river from Manhattan. And the two shooters who died at the they were taken down by police, but they began shooting innocent people inside a Jewish grocery store. The mayor of Jersey City is Mayor Stephen Fulop, who is also Jewish. He's been asked about this being the latest example of anti-Semitism. Cut number three.
Whenever you have hate and anti-Semitism, it's important to call it out for what it is very quickly while the world is watching, to make sure that people recognize that this is something we need to push down on. And when you look at the facts that surrounded what happened here, there were a lot of potential targets on the way. There were a lot of potential targets on the block. They brought high-powered weapons and they fired from across the street and then advanced into this kosher supermarket. And had the police officers not responded from a block away that were on a foot post, more than likely they would have gone into the yeshiva next door. I think that's pretty safe to conclude based on the amount of weapons that they had and the ammunition.
Yeah, it wasn't only the grocery store. This was an Orthodox, is an Orthodox Jewish area. There's no question
correct
that these gunmen, who now we know because of social media and other outlets, they hate Jewish people. They hate the nation of Israel.
Well, Fred, this is obviously this is a issue that's mushrooming around the world. It's almost like some of the violence in Israel is actually coming to America when it comes to the Jews. I taped a program yesterday, a radio program, with Lori Cardoza Moore, and both she and I talked about this growing cycle of anti-Semitic activity. My gosh, you've even got Christian anti-Semitism. We got Rick Wiles. We talked about this last week, I think, saying there's a Jew coup in Washington. So when you've got, he's representative of the church, obviously not our, the churches we attend, but the Jews perceive him as being as representing the church. So all I'm saying is the problem is it certainly came to an ultimate crisis in New Jersey here in the last couple of days, and it was some sort of a cultist group of black Hebrews, they called themselves. But having said that, the spirit, again, the spirit of Antichrist is alive and well, be it in the anti-Semitism, in some of the pushback from Antifa, et cetera. It's just a really rough time, I think, in America right now. Is the enemy is on overdrive trying to interrupt the lives of everyone. So encourage your listeners to be praying about these issues.
Amen. Jan, your show airs noon on Sundays, and what time on Saturdays here on AFR?
1 p.m. Central Saturday, noon Sunday, and we love hearing from AFR folks, and they're some of the most tuned-in listeners thanks to what you guys do every day.
Thank you, Jan. Take care.
I know.
That's Jan Markell.
You know, one of the things about this story, and of course we'll talk about these kind of things, you know, as they crop up, but I was looking at a New York Times article about the shooting, and it's just a small part, but it's odd because authorities initially said the shooting was random. Mm. That was their initial reaction. And I'm always, see, to me, I go, how do you know it was random?
Yeah.
And if you don't know, because they changed.
You're talking about New Jersey.
Yeah, the New Jersey. They changed because information came out and it wasn't random. These were people targeting. These were anti-Semitic individuals targeting Jews, okay? So if you don't know, why say that?
Yeah.
Because they have to protect the Muslims.
That's right. Second bingo of the show, Tim. This is why else would you say it was random if you don't know the facts?
Because you want to get it out. You want to listen. The vast majority of Muslims are peaceful people. We have to say this every time so we're not misunderstood.
Yeah.
And Ray, I'd like you to comment on this too.
Well, it's totally true, Tim. You've got, what, a billion Muslims in the world.
Right.
We're not at all saying everybody, every one of them wants to shoot and kill people. But there is a small minority who, in the name of their own religion, are willing to cause mayhem, havoc, and shoot other people in the name of their religion. They are there, Tim.
Well, and there is a teaching inside Islam based on Quranic verses that advocates for Muslims to take up arms against non-Muslims, to kill, to whatever, because you have to conquer. That's not a cult like teaching inside the Islamic faith. If you
right.
if you look at it around the world, but most Muslims, the vast majority of Muslims, are not obviously violent people. They're peaceful people. They love their families and want to live out their lives in peace, just like the rest of us. However, when it comes to the national news media, the politically correct crowd, the secular progressives, I know there's a lot of overlap there. They view it as their job to protect, to not let people expose what I just talked about. Okay, so so they need to cover for the Muslims who are acting out in a violent way and who are jihadis and who do. So how do you do that? You underreport, you don't report, you change the report, you say it's random before you even know about it.
Or in this country, you say it's in Nadel Hassan at Fort Hood, you say domestic violence.
Yeah, workplace violence. Now, contrast that with the El Paso shooter who had a manifesto, yes, but he was a white supremacist. White nationalist?
Yeah, he hated his Mexican people, and he also was an environmentalist. There was a mixture there.
Okay.
But initially, what came out was that he hated illegal immigrants.
What I'm saying is the media is quick to report that,
right?
Because it's a white dude.
Right.
Okay, we can say anything we want about him.
Yeah, they don't start out by saying, we want to make it clear that not all white people are violent. All white people hate illegal immigrants, but this one
they
did.
Don't say that.
They don't say that.
They don't say that. That's a very good point. They don't say that. So if the killer is a white guy, then let him have it.
Yes.
You know what
That's
I'm saying?
Right. All killers, all murderers, you should let them have it.
I know,
yeah,
but
right.
if it's a Muslim jihadi, especially right. from a foreign country, we don't want to talk about that. We
right.
want to. It's kind of like when they reported on 9/11, Ray. Do you remember?
Sure.
The anniversary of 9/11, the New York Times. This past few
yeah.
months ago, they said the day that planes flew into the building.
Right. Yes.
Huh?
Not laughing at the tragedy, just laughing at
no.
their take on it.
Right, right, right. The planes just happened. This happened.
Yeah.
They malfunctioned and happened.
And went into the Twin Towers. Planes right. took... No, the headliner of the story was planes took aim. You remember that?
Yeah. I don't remember that wording.
No, planes...
That's exactly... That's right.
Yes, it was... Planes took aim on 9/11 at the buildings
oh
in New York City. Yeah. The reason they did that, somebody... We'll get to Robert in just a second. The reason they did that, an editor at the New York Times said... We cannot say Islamic jihadis plotted to bring down the Twin Towers.
Right.
How do we change that to protect the Muslims? We say planes took aim.
Right.
We change the truth. Now, they would say they're doing that. That's a noble thing to do.
To protect the innocent.
To protect minorities from
right.
being discriminated against or animosity building towards Muslims because we're reminded of what happened on 9/11.
Right.
But it's a factual change that's really not the business of the news to decide who needs to be protected
yeah.
or not. One other thing related to that, I never will forget reading from the guy who owns the BBC, who was running the BBC.
Yes.
The British Broadcasting Company. This is about 5 years ago. I sent this to Ed. He knows what I'm going to say. There was an interview done of this guy. He was a top dog at the BBC. And they said to him... how is it you treat Muslims and Christians differently in your reporting? Just what I've talked about. He said, well, yes, we do that. And the reason we do that is because Christians have broad shoulders and they can take criticism.
Right.
But the Muslims can't and they'll blow up our building.
Huh?
No, I'm serious.
No.
That's what he was saying.
Yeah.
He didn't say exactly like that, but he said Christians have broad shoulders. They can take criticism. So we treat them differently. We have scrutinized them differently. We're not going to say the same things about Muslims because look what happens. This was the BBC,
right.
The top guy in a open comment about how they treat Christians and Muslims differently. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Well, our White House correspondent is Dr. Robert Jeffress, who also serves as senior pastor of the First Baptist Church in Dallas.
In his spare time.
Texas,
when he's
yeah.
not reporting on.
Exactly. Robert joins us now from, I guess he's in Dallas. Don't know. Robert, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Doing well. We thank you for joining us. So you were at the White House yesterday? For what reason?
Yes, yesterday evening. And it was a time they were having the Hanukkah party, but also President Trump was using that occasion to sign this historic executive order against anti-Semitism. And I was privileged to be invited by the president to say a few words before he signed that historic piece of legislation, and it was just a great occasion.
Okay, by the way, how long do you have? Do you have 5 more minutes with us?
Sure.
Okay, because we're going to play. What are we going to play,
Pastor Jeffress? Fred here. I want to play a little clip of what you had to say during that ceremony, because in the middle of the ceremony, President Trump called you from the crowd to come up and
done that before.
Yeah, he's done that and recognized you. But I wanted our audience to hear what you took the opportunity to declare the president's support of Israel and what that means. Cut number 12.
It is true. I believe President Trump is the most pro-faith president in history when you look at what he has done for people of all faiths. And Mr. President, you know, Jewish and Christian believers alike believe what God said to Abraham in Genesis 12, that God would bless those who bless Israel, and he would curse those who curse Israel. And I want to thank you, Mr. President, for being the kind of president who has the courage to stand up and be, when it comes to Israel, on the right side of history, but most importantly, you're on the right side of God, and that's why you are not going to fail, and we're going to stand behind you 100%. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Jerry.
So, Robert, do you agree with you? Robert, you want to comment on Robert?
What did you think about
what you said yesterday? the President Trump is to be. What did the executive order actually say?
This executive order it has been mischaracterized some as thought police and so forth. What this is aimed at doing is removing Title VI funding from educational organizations, especially colleges, that have become a hotbed for anti-Semitism, and saying if you speak out against Jewish people, if you are antagonistic toward Israel, you are in danger of losing your Title VI funding. That's what this is about. By the way, Betsy DeVos, our education secretary, was with us for that ceremonial signing yesterday as well. And look, anti-Semitism is running rampant throughout our country. It is being inflamed by the left. And I think the president is showing great courage in saying we're not going to put up with that as a nation.
Robert, thank you so much for being on with us. Appreciate your counsel to the president. Thank you for being on with us on such short notice this morning. Look forward to having you on in the future to talk more great things that this administration is doing for Christians, in particular. You want to comment real quick on the judges, because we need to be reminded about this.
Yeah, that's right. He, in fact, I was visiting with him last week about this. He is on track to have 180 judges appointed, I think, by the end of this month, 220 by next month, the most of any president in history. 25% of appellate judges have been appointed by President Trump. That is a lasting legacy and one that will impact this country for good for generations to come.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Robert. Take care, my friend.
Thank you, Tim. Great to be with you.
Okay. That's Dr. Robert Jeffress. Ray?
Hey, let me just jump on that last point, because, Tim, we hear over and over again, why do you evangelicals, you know, people want to take shots at the president for this and that, things he said, and we've all, you know, we've commented sometimes on things the president has said or done that we disagree with, but at the top of the list for most evangelicals is who's going to be on the Supreme Court,
right?
Who's going to be on the Court of Appeals, who's going to be in these federal district courts. Mr. Trump promised he would give us conservative judges. He has kept his word.
Mm-hmm.
That, above everything else, I think explains why evangelicals, by huge numbers, continue to support this man.
Absolutely. And let me just say, too, And this is not to excuse bad behavior that President Trump has exhibited from time to time. By bad behavior, I'm talking about tweeting things and saying things that were not presidential. He does that from time to time. Have you noticed?
once or
you know,
twice.
I haven't really been paying close attention. I've heard a couple people mention.
So he does do that from time to time. And but let me just say, let me put that in some context again, not to make excuses, but maybe give some reasons why, because that's kind of about the only thing that we have a problem with.
Right.
His policies are pretty solid for Christians in America, and things we believe: pro-life, religious freedom, great judges,
support of Israel,
those things. Jobs, the economy,
right.
The present deregulation, lower taxes, those help families. But put yourself in his shoes. If you had been elected president by the American people, and as he was, duly elected, and you had a special prosecutor investigating you for 2 years, staffed by your political enemies, an unlimited budget, basically, to come after you and your family.
Media piling on.
The media going after you 24/7 every day. And all you wanted to do was make America great again.
Right.
And from day one, you're being investigated. And then you begin to learn that there's a deep state. You can't trust anybody. There are leakers everywhere.
Right.
So you're surrounded by people. You look and you go, can I trust him? Can I trust her? No wonder he put his family around him,
yeah.
around him, and people is, so if that were you, if that any human being, as I've said before, you have your breaking point.
Yeah.
All right. And if that's what you're living with 24/7 for the first 2 years, or now 3 years of your presidency, then you know what. From time to time, you're going to lash out. I would. Who wouldn't?
Sure.
You're going to lash out. And it just so happens he's got a pretty big Twitter feed to lash out with. And I don't think anybody stops him. Right?
Well, and Ray, the fact of the matter is, wherever he's at spiritually and with God, right. he started off as a street-fighting New
right.
York City guy
right.
who's going to be a little bit on the brash side and outspoken side to begin with, Ray. So
going to say some bad words every once in a while.
He's going to say some bad words every once right. in a while. And so you pile on to that, all that Tim just said. Yeah, you're going to get some tweets.
Sure. He's a New York street fighter. He's going to talk like one and act like one. But, you know, you're making a great point, Ed.
I did, Ray. Well, in fact, I made mine for 2 minutes. He makes his for 10 seconds. You commend him. But go ahead.
Yes, you both made.
Thank you.
And Timmy, as president, made superbly excellent
Absolutely.
Points.
And I want to say, Tim's points were even better
right.
than mine.
You guys, I didn't bring that up just for you to say that about me. I really didn't.
But
go ahead.
But it's very true.
Yeah.
Whatever we're going to say, he's come a long way. I think he understands something about our faith and what we believe. And God alone can judge his heart, right?
Right.
We don't have to judge his heart. We judge his actions. And I think on the basis of what he's done, that's why evangelicals are still standing with him.
Yeah, absolutely. Policy over personality.
Right.
Even though there's a lot of President Trump's personality that I admire, that is his fighting spirit.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say this. I don't know personally many people who would, for 3 years, have lasted through
the abuse he's
taken.
And it isn't like he needs the power or money.
Right.
Okay, he can leave tomorrow, and he's going to have a pretty good life.
Yeah.
Right.
Guess what? I think his houses are paid off.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Trump Tower has been paid for a while. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Thank you, Fred.
You're welcome.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.